We always get those. Again, my plan.
It's the old center of the wheel syndrome.
Hot flash, yeah. That's a theme around here. I'm always hot flashing.
Yeah, me too. Oh my goodness.
I have so many fans in my house, you know.
Yeah.
I just have to go stand in front of them.
You know, motherwort helps. I don't know if you've tried that.
I've
probably have tried all that stuff.
There came
a
time when nothing.
I'll tell you what else helps. Stripping.
Yeah, well, that's like this, you know. Boom, 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 boom. All
day
long.
We'll be rehearsing at her studio sometimes, and we're just like, wing, fling, wing.
Be your guest.
Be his guest.
Get the urge to strip. Don't let us stop you.
No, nope, we won't. You're ornery, mister.
Sounds like a song. I G O I got S H shit for not doing C R I crip art from the disabled community. Because their problem was he was doing art just as a person, mm-hmm. and it wasn't about being a crip, and that was like not cool. I know. I R E A
Read.
Red. That you get the same kind.
Yes, from being disabled. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mhm. It's true.
Tell us about that. What is that?
sometimes it's like, you know, people don't really understand. And if you get up, like when I first became disabled about 10, 12 years ago, I guess.
What is your disability?
I hurt my back and a disc herniated, and they kept making me do work hardening, lifting and pulling 50 pounds, and they wouldn't believe me. I kept telling them there's something the matter with my bones, and they kept saying, no, you just have a back sprain, you know. And they kept making me do all this work, and it kept getting worse and worse until I woke up paralyzed one morning, couldn't move from my neck down. And so when I got up in front of people, I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to play guitar or do anything again. So for a long time, I didn't play music for a while. And then I realized that I just had to tell people my story and not let the industry stopped me from playing my music, because people, I would say, my hands aren't working so good today, excuse me if I don't make a chord or something right on time. And people were so accepting and loving, you know, and it was like, it was all my fear about just being out there as I am now, instead of, you know, letting the industry go, oh, you're disabled, oh, you're too old, you can't do this.
Hey. I did not R E A read A about that. He didn't read about that part. I was T talking about G A T G A Y gay giving you shit.
Oh,
not doing gay music.
Yeah. When I first started doing my music, I tried to get my music out to a lesbian group, and they wouldn't touch my music because they told me that it was too male. And I was singing Wild Dykes on Bikes.
Whoa.
Oh my. And so, yeah, it was very interesting how it was accepted when I first started doing Wild Dykes on Bikes. It was accepted by everybody else but the lesbian community.
Wow. The S A same with about the disabled community, right? When Frank, the whole time really that Frank has been doing his art, everybody has accepted it except the disabled community. And I mean, we've had situations where they've been putting on an event mm-hmm. that is focused on disability and sensuality and mm-hmm. eroticism. Mm-hmm. And the guy who was giving carte blanche to put the show together, and he said, well, of course we have to have Frank Moore because Frank's been doing art about that for like 30 plus years. And he comes over and he's real excited. And Frank said, are you sure they're going to let me do it? And he says, they told me I could do anything I want. Oh, but Frank kept going. And he said, well, I'll just tell them you're in the show. He calls back. He said, you're right. They said, no, I have carte blanche except for you.
Oh, my goodness.
You can't be in the show.
I don't get that.
But he, on the other hand, he's a dancer. And he said he's always had a fantasy of dancing nude. And so Frank said, at my next performance, at the time we were doing these five-hour ritual performances with audience participation, he said, if you come to my next performance, I'll introduce you at some point and you can dance, mm-hmm. which he did. And he said it was like the highlight of his dancing career to do that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
But now... She, they, S. Well, now they're saying that historically, now it's like in books, right? Because now all those people, because Frank was kind of in the age group that, you know, was at the beginning of the disabled uh-huh. kind of rights thing and all that stuff. So
out.
Now they're saying when all these books are getting written about disabled culture and stuff, that Frank Moore was a pioneer, that he was doing art as a person before most of us were even thought of ourselves as people, let alone artists. And, you know, it's like, oh, we owe everything to Frank and all this kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like with Wild Dykes. It was one of the first very out songs. And then, you know, everybody started coming out writing lesbian and gay songs. But it took a long time. So it's kind of interesting. I don't understand why it works like that either. Doesn't make any sense to me.
It took a long time for a lot of entertainers who were like...
Here's your mic.
Oh. It took a long time for a lot of entertainers to come out and admit mm-hmm. that they were gay or lesbian. And you know, we heard about it maybe after they died.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then,
right.
They didn't get to celebrate their victories while they were alive.
Right.
Well, and now they have Out Music, which is it's located on the East Coast, and I entered my whole CD into a competition that they had as far as the artwork and songs, and we got nominated for the most outstanding recording new band. Which was really exciting for the very first CD. So that was really neat. And so they really work hard to get musicians out. And I, you know, interact with them a lot online. And recently there were a lot of people coming online and saying that they have gone to places like Los Angeles and New York and tried to be really out with their music still in this 2006. And they find that people who are looking for band members, they aren't looking for real out musicians. They don't want you to sing really out music.
Oh my.
That's it. Yeah.
Wow.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Like your D A D, like your dad. Could would not give you a G guitar because G girls or guys, GU guitars are
for guys. Mm-hmm. Yes. When I was I was really young, my father used to play, he tried to play the guitar, and he was trying to learn a Little Brown Jug, and I would hear him doing it, you know. And so one day he sat the guitar down on his bed, and I went in there, and he went into the kitchen, and I picked up the guitar, and I started playing Little Brown Jug, just from what I'd heard. Well, my dad came up to the door, and he said to me, real stern, put that guitar down. And I was like, I put it down. And I didn't know what that had done to me until about 2-3 years ago. I went to a friend of mine who does hypnosis therapy, and I was having trouble remembering the words and the music to my songs when I got up in front of people, and I couldn't figure out why. So she put me under, and the first thing, as soon as I tuned into that moment, it was exactly the moment when my father said, don't touch that guitar. And it was like, oh, I just, I lightened up. From that time on, I haven't had trouble memorizing the words or the music. It just went away. And when I wanted to play an instrument in band, I wanted to play drums. And my father said, no, if you want to play something, you'll play a clarinet. And I said, oh, well, I want to play music bad enough. I'll play the clarinet.
Things don't have G gender.
Yeah, exactly. They sure don't. You'd think so in this world, though, wouldn't you? With all the pink and blue, and is it a boy? Is it a girl?
But U G O, you got your guitar. H I T, hitch. What was it? You got your, was it guitar? Yeah, hitch. Hiking?
Yes, I got my guitar. I had run away from home because I couldn't stand. My father was being too much of a control freak, and my mother was being too passive. So I left home at 17, and I was hitchhiking. It happened to be my birthday. It was on my 18th birthday, and I was getting ready to head to California. And
from where?
From Florida. And this really nice man who owned a trucking company picked me up hitchhiking. And I told him it was my birthday. We were just casually talking. He pulls over into this shopping mall parking lot. Whoa. And there was a music store. And he gets out of the car and he says, I'll be back in a minute. And he walks into the store and he comes out with a guitar in his hands. I had no idea it was for me. And he got in the car, and he went, happy birthday.
Whoa.
And, of course, I started crying. It was a huge, I mean, for a stranger to give me a guitar, that guitar became so many things.
He did not know G guitars were not for women.
That's right. Girls. He didn't know. That's right. And it was I had that guitar for so long, and I'll tell you, as I was hitchhiking, because I hitchhiked all around the country for quite a few years, and I didn't have a whole lot to take with me, that guitar became a pillow wall. Yeah. You hitchhiked too?
Yeah. During he hitchhiked from let's see, I guess from California to Santa Fe, and then from Santa Fe to Massachusetts.
All right. Yeah. I hitchhiked from Florida to California. Well, from Florida to Texas, Austin. From Austin to San Francisco. From San Francisco back down to Austin. from Austin to Mexico, back down to Austin, and then to Florida, and then to Woodstock, which I didn't know was going on at the time.
Oh, that was when the festival was happening?
Yeah, that
was
a surprise to me. I went to visit a cousin, and my cousin said, "You going to Woodstock?" And I said, "What's Woodstock?" And he said, "It's going to be a big music festival, and Janis Joplin's going to be there." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm out of here." I got picked up by an antique fire engine with this wild hippie dude with long red hair driving it, and it loaded full of hippies. He pulls over, and I jump in, and we all just zoomed right off, and they closed the whole freeway down. It was a parking lot. And we all had to park the red fire engine, and he lived next door to Bob Dylan, and he knew the area really good. So we all walked up to the site, and he took us to this place. There was a pond right behind the stage at Woodstock, and the pond was wonderful, and we put up a tent there, and there was a hole about this big in the fence that went right into behind stage. So we went right in behind stage. Janis Joplin, I look up.
Oh, my.
And Janis Joplin is spinning around like this, coming down from a helicopter.
Whoa.
And she's going, "Fuck, man!" And laughs and goes and gets on stage.
Wow. I was S. T. stuck in San Bernardino during that period.
Oh, bummer.
Dreaming about doing stuff like coming to San Francisco and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you made it.
Certainly did. B. I. Big time.
Yeah. Isn't it wonderful what we overcome? Yeah. Jan did, too. She overcame a lot to get where she's at today, too. She's from Nashville.
Memphis,
I mean, but she hung out in Nashville, too. You didn't play there ever? Well, see what
Tell
I
us.
Know.
Tell us. M-N-A-N-E. Never C O R R correct M my M Y T myths myths never correct myths.
Okay, I hung out in Nashville too.
Use your mic.
Twice.
I hung out in Nashville twice.
W I with E with Elvis?
No, I didn't hang out with Elvis. I used to hang out with Cordell Jackson.
Oh, wow.
One of our idols.
Yeah, Cordell Jackson.
Better known as?
The Rockin' Granny. Yeah, yeah. I was a member of NARIS in Memphis. And got to meet a lot of people that way. I also worked in the, working in the studios as well. So I met some really famous people, you know, in Memphis that icons now.
Yeah. You know? What were you doing working in the studio as a?
I occasionally go in and do demos for people or sing background on songs that songwriters are doing and. I also played in clubs and hotels and on Beale Street, and it's a whole different culture there as well. So I go back so I can, like I said earlier, brush up on my accent a little bit, visit my family, and all I have to really do is just talk to my family, and my accent comes back. But. Yeah. I've been here for 15 years, and I really love the cultural aspects of, you know, the attitude here. I wouldn't say it's completely non-racist, but it's not the same.
Uh-huh.
it's not the same here as it is there.
Right. Not. Even. Like. On. The. E. A. East
Coast.
Coast. Mm-hmm. Not even on the East Coast. Is it like here, you mean?
That's prejudice, you mean.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's changing. It's changing. Thank goodness.
I wish I could believe that. I'd love to believe that. But that's what we're about, is like breaking down the barriers.
Absolutely.
All yes. kinds of barriers. That's what lover.com is about, too.
Right.
That's one that's of the right. things that I say. Twist your mind open. You know, let songs from the wild twist your mind open. Because it's like some of those things, man, I swear, they're like jars that have been sealed shut, you know, their brains.
Right.
It's like, hello, open up and let a little bit of sunshine in there.
Like when I was in S.A. Santa Fe, I D A danced in B A R in bars E T etc. But when I went to A C O a community, a commune in Massachusetts, and they H A had a they had a band and I started dancing when the band was playing. They freaked out. They freaked out. They didn't want Frank to dance.
I'm wordless. Oh my God.
S. So the leader of the commune said that he wanted Frank to dance when the band was playing.
Mm-hmm.
They P L played at right, so the leader of the band played at Carnegie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So the leader of the commune had Frank get up on stage and dance while the band was performing.
Yay!
Made his point.
Very good.
Yeah.
You danced at Carnegie Hall.
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Pretty good.
That's very good.
I am a maid. It into Cream magazine. They did
That's so cool, Frank.
Not B A D bad for my first gig.
I know, it's all uphill from there, huh? Or downhill, I should say.
You were on A R T H You, Arthur Godfrey?
Jan.
I was on the Ted Mack.
That was it, the
original
Ted
Mack amateur hour.
That was it. That was it, yeah.
That wasn't my first gig, but that was the only like it was on black and white television when there were three networks, and that was it.
We are dating ourselves.
Yeah.
I think my face already does that.
My first gig was when I was 3 years old, and my grandmother Bell and my grandfather Bell took me to the Moose Lodge for a spaghetti dinner, and there was a band playing. And I was just real short then. And I was just tall enough that I could walk under all the tables. And I remember sitting on this metal chair, and I had on a short dress. My grandmother dressed me up fufu, which I hated. And I could feel the cold seat of the chair on my legs, you know, because it was so short. And I remember getting up, and the band started to sing The Good Ship Lollipop. And I was a huge fan. And so I just thought that was great. And I walked under all the tables, and I walked right up there, and I got up on stage, and I got beside the guy, and I used to do this thing like this. So here I am, shaking my arms, you know, my hands like this, and I'm rocking back and forth from one leg to another, singing The Good Ship Lollipop. And the guy looks down at me, and he just starts laughing. He hands me the mic. That was the first time a mic was ever in my hand. And I could hear my voice. I could hear my voice.
She hasn't stopped.
And I was like, what was that? And I just sang and sang, and I kept singing it, and I wouldn't stop. And they kept playing it and kept playing it.
I told you she wouldn't stop.
So my grandma came up, and she grabbed me, and she went, okay, it's time to get off now. And she said, I threw a fit all the way back to the chair.
And you went like that.
S. O. So. How. Did. You. Get. To. Where. You. Are. Now.
Well. Jan and I were at a party together not too long ago, about 3.5, almost 4 years ago. And I said, you know, I'd really like to get a band together again. And Jan said, you know, I would too. And I said, well, I got a lot of songs. And she said, well, I haven't been writing any right now. And I said, well, I got enough songs that we could do. And so we started practicing and just kept evolving from there till we got all the songs learned. And we just, I decided that, you know, we needed a demo. People kept saying, we need you to do a demo. And I said, you know, a demo is so much work. Let's just do a whole CD. Because I got the songs. And at that time, it was like, I just kind of tossed it up in the air again. And I was like, well, I'm not rich, so I don't have a lot of money to do this. And I have wonderful friends. So I just started putting it out there, and I said, well, we need to record these songs. I've got 14 songs that could be recorded right now. And it was like all these people just started coming in and appearing in our lives, you know, that would play guitar, would play bass, play drums, and record it, do all this stuff for us.
The producer.
The producer. Help us with the graphics. Everybody just started appearing. And it was like, this is right timing. It couldn't be any better, you know. So we did it.
Why don't we give a little credit to some of those people?
Yes. We had Tom Finch played lead guitar. He also played some bass. There was Terry Lee Kneerum, who is producer, and he also plays drums. And he does all the recording for us at his home in Santa Rosa. Barry, who was playing on the keyboards, Barry and Pete, keyboards and rhythm guitar. And Jan, of course, on keyboards, and me on rhythm guitar, and we both share the vocals throughout. Who else? Am I missing anybody? I think that's pretty much all the folks that worked on it. Well, no. We had David, David Sidney Scott played saxophone, and Laurie Roth played flute on a couple of songs for us, too. So we were very lucky, and we're still very lucky. We have all these wonderful people that just want to keep working with us.
It does W-O work like that. It does work like that.
Yes, it does. Once you put the word out. Mm-hmm. Once you start talking it. Jan and I were just talking about that on the way over. How when you start to talk your magic and work your magic, it starts to happen. The goddesses and the gods all smile and...
I have to write it down. If I write something down, it happens.
Well, we fire up our altars and, get the candles going, and do the drumming and all that good stuff.
Things K keep P O popping, P-O-P, no, O, opening up. That's been our experience, really, our whole life, that things just keep opening up. And it's, like Frank always says, it's just following.
Yeah.
Like, rather than having, like, this is what I want to do, just being open to the possibilities. And then when they open up, you got to, like, go, oh, okay, and you got to, like, grab it.
I agree.
That's kind of what's directed us. Mm-hmm. Like, lover. Like, we had no intention in the world of starting an internet radio station. Never. Mm-hmm. And Frank was cruising the internet 8 or 9 years ago and, looking for nude sites. and found a site called Art Cam, which was three artists that would do erotic, like, shows, live shows. That always opens things up whenever he starts looking for nude something. Something happens. And the guy from this threesome was reading Annie Sprinkle's book at the time, and Annie lists Frank as one of her teachers.
Oh, trippy.
And so he goes, oh my God, I'm just reading about you. And so then he's like, they start being buddies. And this guy was involved in this internet station called Fake Radio. And this was like way at the beginning of the internet radio stuff, where it was just geeks who could figure it out. Like, there wasn't like kind of a thing that somebody could just do.
Yeah.
And Frank said, I've always had a fantasy about having a show on the radio. So the guy said, oh, I can work that out for you. And it turned out this radio station was all about like free speech. And Frank was targeted by Jesse Helms in 90 along with five or six other artists as obscene artists.
Oh, brother.
So it's like, that impresses a lot of people, right? He had the General Accounting Office investigate Frank twice and couldn't find anything. No one ever contacted us directly. You read about it in newspapers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
whoa.
Yeah, yeah. They see... L-O closed. They closed down the performance space in New York City that had booked Frank. What happened was this, the Washington Times, is that it? It's a Mooney newspaper. Mm-hmm. They did an article about, obscenity and art or something, and they went to Franklin Furnace, which was this space that we had performed in a number of times, and they had an archive where they were kind of more famous for their archive in a way. And so these reporters didn't say why they were looking, but the archive's open to anybody. They go in and they investigate. Well, what they're looking for is anybody with anything that has to do with eroticism. And then they write this article where they list Frank and two or three other artists as obscene artists, and they quote from Frank's script, which is part of the archive. And we heard that was the source material for Jesse Helms' investigation.
Oh my
this
God.
Article. And so they ended up, and this space, unlike a lot of other performance spaces, took pride in the fact that they booked all of these artists that were under investigation. Mm-hmm. Whereas all these other places started like not booking these people that they had booked before. Everybody cut it because they don't want to lose their grants and stuff.
Yeah.
So the fire department closed the space down.
Oh,
that's
my
the way
goodness.
They do it. The fire department does it. But they did not book me before. Well, these other spaces, other than Franklin Furnace, most of the other like alternative art spaces would not book Frank, even though he was fairly well known in the performance art circuit. And they would have people like that were names, like mm-hmm. Karen Finley at the time, who was very popular in mm-hmm. Annie, would contact these spaces and say, you should book Frank, and they wouldn't do it. They'd book Frank when they were like on the board of a festival. And then when somebody asked them one time, this one guy, he said, why did you book Frank for this festival, but you won't book him at your space? He said, because I think Frank is doing important work, but I'm personally uncomfortable with it, so I don't want to be around it.
Oh, gosh.
But these spaces, once Jesse Helms was investigating Frank, they didn't want to be seen as being on the same side as Jesse Helms. So we toured for a couple of years. We just like performed in all these spaces that wouldn't book us before, and then really wouldn't after either, uh-huh. you know.
Oh, goodness sakes.
But now, where was that story? Where did it come from? So the radio station heard that Frank was, Frank Moore, investigated by Jesse Helms. We want him. We're about free speech. Well, it turned out they were, what they meant by free speech is you can curse. But, you know, there were a lot of things you couldn't talk about.
Yeah.
And Frank's real good at honing
a
in
lot
on
of
that
topics.
Stuff and then doing it. So it was like, you know, some of the DJs would say, if I don't think anybody's listening. If I don't get 3 emails in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to stop doing my show.
Oh.
So Frank would talk about that on his show, and he would say, I don't think that's true, but even if it was true, and somebody tunes in and there's nothing there, they're never going to come back.
Yeah,
you've got to have something going.
You have to have something going.
So then the management would show up in a private chat and tell Frank he's not allowed to talk about the company policy on the air. And Frank would have me read that. So
you were talking about something.
And then it turns out they said they had to. Frank said that the management is like a couple of guys, right? Had wet dreams about quitting their day jobs and running this radio station like with secretaries, you know. And so Frank kept saying, "Forget about the money. This isn't about money. We're just doing this." And he would say, how much? Because they said, we have to sell out. We have to get corporate sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there'll be a few things we can't do anymore, but it's for the, you know, it's the old story. It's for the greater good. No, no. So Frank said, well, how much money do you need to run it? They wouldn't tell us. Mm-hmm. Because he said, because you could get the DJs to chip in $5 or $10. There were a lot of DJs, mm-hmm. you know. They wouldn't tell us. It turned out it was $99.
Oh, my
That's
goodness.
That's all per month. $99 a month to run this station. They said they had to sell out. Frank always says, I'm willing to sell out, but nobody's named my price yet. <You know>? Certainly isn't $99. And so it got really, like, heavy, and we were getting these, like, hate emails because it was like Frank was talking and like he was pushing people's buttons. He was saying, you don't have to sell out to do what you
want
to do.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And they're, oh, you hippie, what do you know? You don't know the real world. Start your own station.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point, we thought, well, maybe we should. You know, we didn't know anything about anything. And Mikey took a crash course on internet radio stations for a week. So we never missed our Sunday night show.
Cool.
And gave them warning and stuff. They're long gone.
Uh-huh.
And we, you know, we were pretty much just it was supposed to be us. And this other DJ that came with me that did a show live from Japan.
Ah.
And it was like Sunday nights from like this hour to this hour. And then the next thing you know, we're doing it 24 hours a day, like 8 years later.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I know. It is amazing how much prejudice there is and how when you talk about things that get people, you know, like they're just uptight about it. I get that because a lot of my songs not only are out music, but they just, I tend to talk about things like that too, that people are like, you know, well, even sex, you know, right. Because I'm so open about talking about sex.
And they say, we don't play that kind of music here.
Oh, my.
It's like, but everybody has it.
and everybody else is talking, is singing yeah. about right. it. Too. Right. The mainstream radio stations. Mm-hmm. I mean, we you know, their songs are about sex.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. It's just, it's bizarre.
I mean, television, you know, commercials, they're all about
right.
sex.
Right. Mm-hmm. Frank's always saying that, and I get shit. Mm-hmm. He'll look at, like, these commercials that are so, you know, in your face.
Yeah, so in your face.
Yeah.
I mean, there couldn't be anything else. I mean, yeah. they're, it's yeah. just, it's unacceptable.
But, a real person. That's what that if it's about if it's not if it's real. That's what it seems like makes
yeah.
people uncomfortable.
I agree. Yeah. If it is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's you know I some of my songs I write about things that I'm not necessarily experiencing personally, but I might write about something that affects me, you know, but I try to write about things in a new way, some way that somebody else isn't writing about it, you know, and expose different things about it or put a little twist on it to make it just more interesting. And I guess I tend to make it more radical. I just can't help it.
That is the R E A, that's the real part. P, R, O, that's the real problem. They want the S, E, they want the sex, but
homogenized version.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, they yeah. do.
Yeah.
I know. It's weird. You think you were singing to, you know, and they ask you to describe your music. It's like adult contemporary. It's pretty obvious that you're singing something that is, you know, for adults more. But I don't know. It's like they only want to hear the word sex. But you can't talk about, you know, like we do with animated features or something. You just can't get too into it.
Not, they don't want the graphics, right?
I give, I think, I an intimacy. That's been our theory, that it's the intimacy that scares people off.
Mm-hmm.
If it has a quality of intimacy,
mm-hmm.
that's scary to people.
Oh, I noticed that even when you talk to people, and a lot of people don't like to have eye contact.
Right.
You know, it's like they're... And you're like going... even more extreme, you know? It's like, I'm right here. Something as simple as eye contact, my goodness
sakes.
It's too
intimate. Yeah. We did a S-E series. Oh, the one taste thing. Well, Frank called them a sex cult.
Mm-hmm.
New age sex cult in San Francisco, and they have this fancy space, and they were guests on this show,
mm-hmm.
and we had just lost a series we had been doing at the UC Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
and we were talking about that and about how great it was because we didn't have to pay any rent, and it was a regular thing. It was like every other week, so people could just drop in, and it got to create community, and we would tape it and then play it on the public access channel here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that, it was a big hole losing that. Mm. And they said, you can use our space. We want to support that. That's mm-hmm. a great thing. And so they knew going into it exactly what we were doing. And what happened was their kind of core group of people tended to be the ones that came mm-hmm. every week, in addition to other drop-ins. But there was an intimacy that started to be created, because they would like do sex. That was no problem. Mm-hmm. Like there was like, but the intimacy seemed to shake management, I guess. Hal, isn't that right, Hal? They say things like their PAS passion in L life is to have a G-O good orgasm. Right, like Frank would go through the audience and say, tell me what your passion is to have a good orgasm. That would be like that.
The main one?
Yeah, that was exactly. That was like their passion in
life. Scary.
Yeah.
Now we know why there's so many.
Did you see that?
Now we know why there's so many people driving out there like they do. Look, I haven't had any release in a long time. Today I was thinking about that when it was like Sunday drivers. You know, I thought, you know, I wrote a song called Sunday Drive for the new CD, and I thought maybe I should write one called Sunday Drivers. maybe that's what they're suffering from, Frank. Not enough orgasms.
But what about the intimacy? Or yeah, but I mean that. So that's where they started off. Mm-hmm. But and then, you know, the it was called a workshop because that's what they could call it because of their licensing. So mm-hmm. we said, okay, we won't call it a performance anymore. We'll call it a workshop. We're flexible. And Frank would create these rituals that we would all do together. And you know, they were having all these, like, pretty deep, mm-hmm. intimate experiences with each other and with the other people there. And you could see that it was changing things, mm-hmm. and they were looking forward to it. And it seemed like it made the management uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And the woman that ran it actually, you know, came and it was all kind of hyped up and everything. And she said, oh, I have to get together with Frank. And she got together with Frank and wanted to know his secrets. She said, you're closer to the source than we are. Tell me how you do it. I said, well, you're welcome to study with me, and this is how much I charge. It was like, you know, she was very insulted by that. That was pretty much the beginning of the end. Oh. That plus the, yeah.
Oh, goodness sakes.
You are a very, you are a V O. A voice teacher? Mm-hmm. You said you were a voice teacher?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what she does all week.
In the 70s, I a audition. Oh, right. We were doing a show that was popular, and one of the people that was working with Frank, she was like 17 or 18, and she said she'd always have a fantasy of being a lead singer in a band. Mm. And so Frank said, okay, Well, I'll get a band together for you. We have this show every week, you know. It was at the Mabuhay Gardens.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. We were like the early show every Saturday night, at least.
Uh-huh.
And for 3.5 years. And so he wanted to get another singer to sing with her so they could, like, kind of play together, mm-hmm. you know. And but he wanted somebody that was raw because mm-hmm. Amy was real raw. And and boy, it was hard. Mm. It was really hard to find people that could just, like, belt it out and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. have a good time and not control mm-hmm. things. B-R-B-E. Because they T-H, they thought G-I, oh, girls shouldn't sing like that.
Yeah, I know. They're like,
right, that's exactly what we were getting. Yeah,
that's exactly why Jan and I have worked so wonderfully together. One of the reasons is because we both love to belt it.
Yeah.
And we have the capability, and we're not afraid to.
Yeah.
And just, there's 50 million zillion reasons why I play with Jan still. She's just wonderful. What can I say?
Even if they wanted to belt it out,
It
seemed like there was something that wouldn't let them do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, singing exposes you totally. It's like your speech also has a way. It can expose who you are. And people don't want, for the main part, people don't want anybody else to know them that intimately.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And one hard thing that I, one challenge that I face with a lot of my students is that fear. You know, they love to sing, but they sing inside themselves instead of getting it out. And it's... That's a challenge, but after someone has been around for a while, it kind of evolves, and they start singing out because they want to be heard. But my goal is to have everyone that comes to my studio, Voice Garden in Cotati, to have them fall in love with the sound of their voice. And if they can accept themselves on that level... then their lives are enriched.
Well, Jan is more than a voice teacher. She's a voice healer, too. That's why I look at it. She doesn't just teach. She really does get in there. Deals with all the being.
You. Oh. Open. People. Up. You open people up.
Mm-hmm.
I try. Mm-hmm. I try.
If, no, A, L, O, a lot of V, voice teachers, do the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of voice teachers are into that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a voice teacher years back that tried to... She wanted me to sing, I'm so pretty, oh, so pretty, in that voice. I just kind of looked at her and I just started laughing. I thought she was joking. And she just kind of looked at me real serious like, and I went, you mean it? She goes, yeah, I want to hear your head voice.
That's all some of them want to hear.
As I know, that was all she wanted to hear.
And young girls come to me and they discover their higher voices, but some of them discover their lower voices because they've been taught by other teachers or other institutions, like choirs or choruses. Mm-hmm. They're taught to only sing, you know. I mean, had a voice teacher tried to make me a soprano, and and I would beg off and say, I can't sing that high. It gives me a headache. And one day I was like crying and saying, I can't. And I was in college, you know. I said, this hurts so bad. I know that I am not supposed to sing this high. It's not natural for me. And she finally gave up and said, well, you sing where it's comfortable for you. I had to, you know, really be emotional to get her attention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I teach is for everybody to explore their full range, but to sing in their comfort zone and to have the ability to sing in higher voice as well. But like I was telling Sun on the way up here, we were going, you know, doing some sirens, and that's the way you get to it really fast. You know, you warm up your voice and the head voice, and then it makes everything else just, it's gravy. Everything else is just like butter.
If I can S. If you can sing, anybody can sing. Frank sings. He's like sings in his band.
It's very cool. Yeah.
I believe anybody can sing. Mm-hmm. Anybody can enjoy their singing too. But some people just they don't stick around for the magic to happen. Uh-huh. Sometimes it's very discouraging and frustrating.
Two. M. Most. Most of the time, that's true, that they don't stick around long enough for the magic to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They, L, E, A, leave, R, right, when... It's getting ready to start.
Yeah.
That's been our experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or right after it starts. It's almost like it's too much.
Well, yeah, it freaks them out. It's like it opens them up and they're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. It does. It's interesting. I don't know. I think people, you know, if they really paid more attention to that inner voice, it seems like they'd be a lot further along in their own lives.
Truer words were never spoken. Exactly.
Let's write a song about it right now.
Yeah.
Obviously. It's truer words are never spoken, or obviously.
How obvious,
Or more obvious. Yeah. E. X. A. Exactly. Or. Obvious. Exactly or obviously. Oh, either one of those words would be appropriate in response to that. Exactly. Obviously.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We are just getting started on the conversation. I know, but well, the time thing, we are at the end of the time for the television show. I mean, I don't know. We could talk longer and split it up or something. I don't know. Or have them come back another time.
Yeah, we could do that too.
Yeah. I do have to and a half hours. The show that will run on cable is a 2.5 hour show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this will play on that.
Cool.
But goes fast.
Yeah, it does.
Goes
zip
fast.
Right by.
Yeah. Yeah. M. O. Most. S. Shows. are that are 3:30. Well, most shows on cable are like 30 minutes. Sometimes you'll have an hour show. Mm-hmm. And we have found that the 2.5 hours is like barely enough time to actually be able to relax and talk and not,
yeah,
you know.
Get into a whole big thing. I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing how it quickly goes.
Well, let's see. What are we going to do? Wrap it up? Okay, and maybe we can set up a time for you guys to come back.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Give your plugs.
Yeah, sunbellmusic.com. Go there and check our website out and our CD, Songs from the Wild. You can pick it up there. And we're being played on lover.com and many other radio stations around the world. So go check us out. Get a CD and support your local musicians. Help us get out there more.
Like your VO voice TR train. Oh, training. Plug her voice. Plug your voice training.
Voice Garden.
Voice Garden Studio. And I can be reached Jan Emerson in Cotati. Thank you.
It's on the website, too, so it gives you her phone number and everything, how to get in touch with her. And there's lots of places to vote for us. We're in for a couple of contests, and we're also working on a video. We're sort of in the middle of that for Untamed Heart, and it's going to have white tiger footage. It's going to be really fun.
And V. O, voice, no, V-O, vote. Vote for Frank for president.
Yes, vote for Frank,
Frank
for president.
Frank Moore for president.
Peace is big. We need
it's,
peace.
What's that URL where people can actually vote? Oh, Corey, what is it? Type it into the chat. There's a website where people are actually voting. It's like broken down
cool.
by parties. And Frank was in second place for quite a while. It's like people like, you know, like famous people, Jesse Ventura and a lot of famous people. And there's Frank in second place.
The nice. Next prez.
Well, vote for peace, that's for sure.
The next prez. It's http://, the next prez, P-R-E-Z, all one word,
cool.
.blogspot.com, and Frank's listed under independence.
All right. Well, Belle the Cat will vote for him, that's for sure.
Give. Oh, and Frank's website for that, no, is, you mean for the president thing? No, go ahead. Give that them the B.
Okay. Thank you. Of course.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess
there we go.
We're all
on Frank Moore for president. Sign off.
The big sign off.
There we are, voting for him. Belle the Cat is voting for him.
Okay, we've got Belle the Cat and the pin in the same picture. Okay. Bye bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.